Who are the winners in the war in Iran? Well, I'll start off with talking about one of them, and we'll wrap up this segment by talking about the other. One of them is Russia. I mean, just from a monetary point of view, Russia is gaining, they estimate, between 150 million to 600 million bucks per day from oil exports. So as the war goes on, our pals, you know, maybe Vladimir Putin, you know, that's how much they're bringing in because of what's happening in Iran, compliments of the Israeli and U.S. governments. So current estimates suggest that Moscow has received a windfall of between $1.3 billion and $1.9 billion, almost $2 billion from oil export taxes following the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. You know, so, you know, when that oil was unavailable, it drove up demand for oil from Russia and, of course, from where? Well, India and China in particular. And those are, that's what, one third of the global population right there, India and China, maybe a fourth, somewhere in that range. And they're not getting more of their oil from Russia. I mean, this has been a great deal for Russia, and not just from the monetary, you know, benefits of the additional oil they're able to sell. But, you know, the world is now, especially here in the U.S., is paying much more attention to what's going on in the Mideast than we are in Ukraine. And so, of course, Russia can get away with more there. That's, you know, it's already not going well for Ukraine. It is kind of amazing Ukraine has held on for this long. And the overall long-term prospect of how that war ends, who knows? I know Trump said he'd have it done on day one. Apparently that came and went. We also passed day one of the next year. We'll see. The third thing that's helping Russia here is that this is fracturing NATO even further. I mean, Trump has already done great damage to NATO. But, you know, when he said, hey, you guys ought to help me protect the Strait of Hormuz. So, I mean, you're the head of Britain or France or Germany or Netherlands or Spain. I mean, Spain of all places. What are you going to say? Oh, sure, we'll do whatever you want after you say all these horrible things about us, after you throw terrorists at us, after you threaten to take away Greenland from Denmark. Yeah, sure, we'll do whatever you want. They didn't do that. They said, nah, not so much. So again, yeah, further weakening and kind of marginalizing NATO. And this is all really good stuff for Russia. So again, Vladimir Putin's best friend, Donald Trump, helping him out, this time probably unintentionally. I want to look at a few more aspects of the war in Iran, including the environmental impact. But I want to also take a quick look at the impact on farm life. And again, this is more of a, not just upper Midwest, but certainly the farm regions of the South and even Northeast that are impacted by this. But here in Iowa, we are corn country. We also have a lot of dependence on soybeans, of course, and hogs and cattle. But corn is a very heavy eater. Corn loves fertilizer, loves nitrogen, and it's not going well. Farmers may be applying less chemicals this season. We'll see. They're just getting ready to start planting. But we're already in the fourth year for corn farmers, the fourth year of negative yields, and that's due, of course, to low corn prices and high input costs. And you know, one of the biggest inputs, of course, is fertilizer. So, and this is I'm going to get into the weeds a little bit here, folks. Bear with me. As I started digging into this, I realized I need to know some of this stuff, and maybe you want to know some of this stuff as well. So fertilizer prices are high for a couple of reasons. One is because of something called duties, a countervailing duty. It's a CVD. It's like a tariff. It's specifically on phosphate from Morocco and Russia, phosphate being an important element of the fertilizers corn farmers and other farmers use. Again, nitrogen is key, but phosphorus is an important part of that. They need that to achieve these high yields that farmers have come, you know, gotten used to, you know, producing, even though they are effectively continuing to lose money on what they produce. It's quite the wheel they're stuck on, folks. You know, I wish farmers would switch to organics. I wish farmers would do a lot of things differently, but I don't blame them for being stuck where they are. I understand. And again, a lot of it is the way the market's been set up by federal policy, by farm policy. And so they're applying a lot of fertilizer. And a key element, phosphate, is very costly right now because of this duty, this tariff placed on phosphate from Morocco and Russia. Now, this may surprise you. When did that tariff go into place? It wasn't under Joe Biden. It was under the previous administration of Donald Trump. Biden, in all fairness, kept it going, unfortunately. And the reason it was put in place was to, again, it's called a countervailing duty because of alleged unfair subsidies by Russia and Morocco that were allowing these countries to sell and the companies in those countries to sell phosphate at lower prices than it was available in the U.S. Now, that's okay for farmers, right? Farmers don't care whether they get it from the U.S., Morocco, Russia. They want to get the cheapest product they can because they're already losing money on their crops, right? So along come a company named Mosaic. I've not heard of Mosaic. Mosaic is huge. Mosaic is worth nearly $8 billion. They are a phosphate company. And where did the whole idea to impose this countervailing duty on Russia and Morocco come from? Well, by now you might have guessed that it wasn't the farmers. It was from Mosaic. They argued that it would create fair competition. Farmers protested it. Farm organizations, even the big farm organizations, protested it. Well, you know, of course, who was right? The farmers are right. And Mosaic has benefited greatly by basically restricting the supply of phosphorus coming in from Morocco and Russia. So it enabled Mosaic to command higher prices and get a larger share of the U.S. market. Despite that, causing hardship and additional costs for U.S. farmers. But, again, Trump. Yeah, the friend of the farmer, right? I remember going to a rally of his. This was not the one I got thrown out of. A rally of his last year at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. He talked about how wonderful he was to the farmers, how much the farmers loved him, and he loved the farmers. Well, you know what? You had a chance to do what the farmers wanted you to do 5 years ago. Instead, you went with a big corporation. And the big corporation, Mosaic, has since gotten crazy rich because of policy you put in place. And again, in all fairness, that Joe Biden refused to change. So, again, my criticism of issues in politics in the U.S. is pretty bipartisan. Although I think the Republican Party, the Democratic Party is, maybe they're coming around. Maybe they're starting to see things differently. The Republican Party seems to have just gone off the rails. So back to this story here. There's a study by the Agricultural and Food Policy Center that's located at Texas A&M University. And that study found that phosphate duties, these countervailing duties, the tariffs essentially, they have increased the cost of phosphorus by $6.9 billion between the 2021 and 2025 growing seasons. And that's a lot of hits. That's all taken up by the farmers pay that. Farmers pay that. We can have a bigger conversation about the wisdom or lack thereof of having an ag system that requires so many chemicals to produce what we consume. When I say we, I mean us, our cars, laboratories, hogs, whatnot. But, you know, we have a lot of nitrogen fertilizer production in the U.S. Phosphorus, less so. I'm not sure why. But, you know, add the countervailing duty, the existing, you know, tariff on phosphorus from Morocco and Russia to what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz because of Trump's, you know, voluntary war on Iran. And it is only getting worse and only going to get even worse. We are already seeing farm foreclosures tick up in a big way. We are seeing suicides among farmers and farm communities very high. And we're seeing again, 4 years in a row now of basically, depending on the only thing keeping farmers afloat. Again, this is, I'm not talking about people growing food for local markets, like a lot of people we associate with do. I'm talking about those who are part of the production agricultural system. The only thing keeping corn and bean and probably cotton and wheat and other farmers afloat are federal farm subsidies. So anyway, that's a long way of saying that this war is only going to make the situation for farmers worse. So there is division building on this Iran war in Trump's base. And Trump has kind of written it off, not a big deal. But I'm sorry, when you've got people like Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Megyn Kelly, other very key and respected voices within the MAGA movement, when you've got them offering strong criticism of the war in Iran, you have a problem. You know, it may not yet be translating into a huge defection from Trump's base, but I mean, I think the defection started, well, I first saw it starting March of last year, you know, less than 2 months after he took office. And I've shared some of those comments from former Trump voters with you. They didn't like what happened with the tariffs. Some were really ticked off about the $40 billion that Trump gave to Argentina to help that country increase its ability to sell soybeans at a cheap price to China, you know, really undercutting the U.S. market. People are upset about the way ICE officials have operated. People are upset about the demolition of the West Wing, or the East Wing, whatever wing got taken out. So, you know, and a lot of people in the Trump base were anti-interventionists. They were the America First type that said, you know, we need to stay home, worry about our problems, not get involved with regime change wars. And here we have some key people within in the mega base are starting to think, hey, this is not what we voted for. I'm gonna play three clips. You'll probably never hear me again play three clips in a row in this program from Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Megyn Kelly, but here we go.
Everybody understands that every policy a large government makes, including ours, is influenced by various stakeholders who were affected by the policy. But this is the one area we have to be like, no, it had nothing to do with the fact that his biggest donors were pushing him to do this, or the BB visited 7 times in 1 year. Are you joking? I'm not gonna play along with the lies anymore. I don't hate Jews. I don't hate Israel. I love my country. This has happened yet again. I can give you a whole list of previous times where it's happened. And I think we need to know what happened so we don't hurt ourselves further.
That was Tucker Carlson. So what does Marjorie Taylor Greene have to say?
Why would an American president lead his political party into the midterms waging a full-scale major war completely unprovoked on Iran on behalf of Israel? And that's the way most Americans see it. They see this is for Israel, not for America. Why would an American president do that, which is forcing gas prices to hike right here going into spring break, where families are going to be driving out of town, going into summer, declaring and waging a major full-scale war that seems to have no end in sight, that is not de-escalating, it's escalating every single day. And it just doesn't make sense. And the American people did not vote for this. This is not what we campaigned for, Pamela. I went to, I can't even tell you, countless rallies all over the country for President Trump, campaigning for him and Republicans because we wanted to win. And we said on every single rally stage, no more foreign wars, no more regime change. It's time to put America first. And this is a complete betrayal of those campaign promises.
And that was Marjorie Taylor Greene. And here's Megyn Kelly.
CNN and Reuters report that Trump administration officials on Sunday acknowledged in closed-door briefings with congressional staff to whom they're obligated to brief, to speak and give their intel, quote, there was no intelligence suggesting Iran planned to attack U.S. forces first or to strike our bases in the Middle East. Okay, so there was no indication of an imminent attack. I don't know why Trump said that other than to try to justify the actions. But now we've heard it from several different reporting centers that there was none on the homeland, there was none on our outposts, there was none on our forces, and there was none on our bases in the Middle East. President Trump cited a long list after that of terrible things that Iran has done to the United States or its forces over the years, dating back to when I was 8. Okay, so I mean, I realize the 1979 taking of the hostages for 444 days was bad, but literally, I was in third grade, and it seems like why now? Why now? Why, when we are so fatigued with Middle East war, would we be retaliating against them now?
All right, there's Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Megyn Kelly, all significantly at odds with President Trump's war in Iran. And if you don't believe that's having an impact on elements of the 75 million people who voted for Trump, yeah, it absolutely is. And people who say that, oh, Trump will be fine, this war won't be a big deal. People, you know, right now, people are against this. 59% of Americans overall disapprove. 21% of Republicans polled in a recent Reuters Ipsos poll are opposed to this war. This is the most unpopular war early on, I think, in the history of modern warfare, at least from the American perspective. So, yeah, the fissures are there, the cracks are there, the base is coming apart. We'll see where it leads. One more thing I need to talk about, and this is a big thing regarding the Iran war, the environment. Good story in The Guardian about this this week. Pointing out that since the beginning of March, thousands of Israeli and American bombs and missiles have fallen on Iran's oil refineries, military bases, industrial areas, and nuclear facilities. Iran, in exchange, has launched retaliatory suicide drones and ballistic missiles at similar targets inside Israel and across the Gulf. So a Dutch organization called PAX, I believe that means peace, has already compiled a database of more than 500 incidents of environmental harm inside Iran and an additional 100 impacts outside of Iran. And that's probably going to continue to grow every day. So when Tehran's fuel depots were bombed a couple weeks ago, the Iranian Red Crescent Society and other observers warned city residents to stay at home. And, you know, because when you're bombing oil refineries, you're talking about heavy metals, PFAS, all kinds of toxics being released. And I can't convey a photograph to you on this program, but if you were to see some of the photos coming out of Tehran, massive clouds of black smoke that basically make it look like night during the middle of the day. And to top it off, you know, the wind blowing it into the city of, 10 million people, and rain falling on top of that smoke, bringing down this black soot that is, it's not just black soot, it is toxic. It is, you know, Bill McKibben calls this well. He says this is essentially chemical warfare and affecting almost an entirely civilian population. And that not just the civilian population that is being impacted immediately by the fallout, but a civilian population that will be impacted for decades to come. And the photos that he shares, I mean, I've seen plenty of them. He shares some particularly ghastly ones. It looks like scenes from Dante's Inferno is coming to mind for some reason. McKibben writes that this is as inhumane in its way as the attacks on the girls' school, the school where 165 young girls were killed in a missile attack. McKibben writes, it completely undercuts one of Trump's rationales for his assault, quote, that it will free Iranians to rise up against their government. You know, Trump even said, quote, when we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take, he told Iranians on the first night of the attacks. And as McKibben points out, revolts, however, generally require people to take to the streets, and that requires breathing the air. And meanwhile, the price of oil climbs higher by the hour. The argument for clean energy gets more obvious by the minute. and it is up to all of us to push hard for a new American government that's part of the solution, not the cause of the crisis. I dread to hear what's going to happen in the future. You know, when you've been exposed to wildfire smoke in the West, you know, it isn't just for the day or two or 3 days that that happens. There's an impact on you that sticks with you that can be harmful down the road. And so, I'm looking at a story by Al Jazeera as well here, who write, the medical and environmental fallout is immediate and severe. We've been warned that the smoke contains high concentrations of toxic hydrocarbons, sulfur, and nitrogen oxides. Any rainfall passing through these plumes becomes highly acidic, posing risks of skin burns and severe lung damage upon contact or inhalation. An Iranian woman wrote, the situation is so frightening it's hard to describe. Smoke has covered the entire city. I have severe shortness of breath and burning in my eyes and throat. And many others feel the same. But people still have to go outside because they have no choice. Many places reopened today, but closed again because it's impossible to stay outdoors. So there are so many reasons why this war is terrible. And thank you to Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Megyn Kelly for articulating that to some extent. And I'm glad to see Bill McKibben was the first one I read who had written about the environmental impact of these missile strikes. But now I see the New York Times is also picking up on it. They talk about the impact on the air, the black rain, the people reporting migraines and dizziness and coughing, and also on the water. I mean, you know, they point out that the burning oil depots also contain, you know, they're also gonna, that's gonna contaminate Tehran's water supply. And again, there's a major drought going on in that region. Last year was one of the driest in 20 years in Iran. And that included including a 2023 heat wave that hit 123 degrees. Of course, you need a lot more water when it gets that hot if you can even survive. So, you know, it's not just the smoke from the oil refineries and other facilities being hit, but even just the buildings that are crushed by the bombs. They send up dust, and that dust is harmful to the lungs and to the cardiovascular system. I mean, maybe we remember that here after what happened on 9/11 to the Twin Towers in New York. What was released into the air after that strike was deadly, and people suffered from it long, you know, many years down the road. Anyway, there's one guy who really likes what's going on. That's Pete Hegseth. He says, quote, we are punching them while they are down, which is exactly how it should be. That's Pete Hegseth. That's the defense secretary. Punching them while they're down. No, that's not the language of a professional person in charge of a military organization. That's the language of a bully. That's how bullies talk. That's how people who... if we do have a Nuremberg trial equivalent after this horrible administration is over, I would imagine that Pete Hegseth will be on the front lines of those receiving some level of accountability for their role in the horrible things that are happening today. I said earlier that war is good for Russia, and the Iran war is also good for one other element of our society, so you should feel good about that. It's also good for the weapons manufacturers. They are generating billions in revenue from the Iran war. So, you know, I mean, we're talking about Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, I guess. I guess the company that made my canoe is now also part of a military corporation. Boeing, they're all seeing significant profit and huge boosts in their stocks. They're also, and of course you knew this, some of Trump's top campaign donors. So, I cannot imagine that more and more of the universe that voted for Trump are going to having buyer's remorse and saying, no, this is not what we wanted. You know, we're not here to support, you know, big defense contractors. We don't want to see 10 million people be poisoned by strikes on oil wells and other facilities that we're bombing. We don't like the idea of our defense secretary saying we're punching them while they're down. And we certainly don't like, for those of us in farm country, don't like seeing a war coupled with a previous action of the Trump administration that's making it almost impossible to make a living as a farmer growing crops in the upper Midwest.